Sam Vimes stared out of the window. Veterinary hadn't bothered much in the way of bodyguards. He had used, that is, and he still did use, food tasters. But that was common enough. Mind you, Veterinary had added his own special twist. The tasters were well paid and treated, and they were all sons of the chief cook. But his main protection was that he was just that bit more useful, alive than dead, from everyone's point of view. The big, powerful guilds didn't like him, but they liked him in power a lot more than they liked the idea of someone from a rival guild in the oblong office. Besides, Lord Veterinary represented stability. It was a cold and clinical kind of stability, but part of his genius was the discovery that stability was what people wanted more than anything else. He'd said to Vimes once, in this very room, standing in this very window, they think they want good government and justice for all, Vimes. Yet what is it they really crave deep in their hearts? Only that things go on as normal, and tomorrow is pretty much like today. Now, Vimes turned around. What's my next move, Fred? Dunno, sir. Vimes sat down in the patrician's chair. Can you remember the last patrician? Old Lord Snapcase? And the one before him, Lord Winder? Oh, yeah. Nasty pieces of work, they were. At least this one didn't giggle or wear a dress. The past tense, thought Vimes. It creeps in already. Long past, but already very tense. Not long past, but already very tense. It's gone very quiet downstairs, Fred, he said. Potting don't make a lot of noise, sir, generally. Veterinary's not dead, Fred. Yes, sir. But he's not exactly in charge, is he? Vimes shrugged. No one's in charge, I suppose. Could be, sir. There again. You never know your luck. Colin was standing stiffly to attention, with his eyes firmly fixed on the middle distance, and his voice pitched carefully to avoid any hint of emotion in the words. Vimes recognized the stance. He used it himself when he had to. What do you mean, Fred? He said. Not a thing, sir. Figure of speech, sir. Vimes sat back. This morning, he thought, I knew what the day held. I was going to see about that damn coat of arms. Then there was my usual meeting with Veterinary. I was going to read some reports after lunch. Maybe go and see how they're getting on with the new watch house in Chidling Street, and have an early night. Now Fred suggesting what? Listen, Fred, if there is to be a new ruler, it won't be me. Who'll it be, sir? Colin's voice still held that slow, deliberate tone. How should I know? It could be. The gap opened ahead of him, and he could feel his thoughts being sucked into it. You're talking about Captain Carrot, aren't you, Fred? Could be, sir. I mean, none of the guilds would let some other guild bloke be ruler now. And everyone likes Captain Carrot, and, well, rumors got about that he's the heir to the throne, sir. There's no proof of that, Sergeant. Not for me to say, sir. Dunno about that. Dunno what is proof, said Colin, with just a hint of defiance. But he's got that sword of his, and the birthmark shaped like a crown, and, well, everyone knows he's king. It's his charisma. Charisma, thought Vimes. Oh, yes, Carrot had charisma. He makes something happen in people's heads. He can talk a charging leopard into giving up and handing over his teeth and doing good work in the community, and that would really upset the old ladies. Vimes distrusted charisma. No more kings, Fred. Right you are, sir. By the way, Nobby's turned up. The day gets worse and worse, Fred. You said you'd talk to him about all these funerals, sir. The job goes on, I suppose. All right. Go and tell him to come up here. Vimes was left to himself. No more kings. Vimes had difficulty in articulating why this should be so, why the concept resonated in his very bones. After all, a good many of the patricians had been as bad as any king, but they were sort of bad on equal terms. What set Vimes's teeth on edge was the idea that kings were a different kind of human being. A higher life form. Somehow magical. But, huh, There was some magic at that. Ankh-Morpork still seemed to be littered with royal this and royal that. Little old men who got paid a few pence a week to do a few meaningless chores. Like the master of the king's keys or the keeper of the crown jewels. Even though there were no keys and certainly no jewels. Royalty was like dandelions. No matter how many heads you chopped off, the roots were still there underground, waiting to spring up again. It seemed to be a chronic disease. It was as if even the most intelligent person had this little blank spot in their head where someone had written kings. What a good idea. Whoever had created humanity had left in a major design flaw. It was ascendancy to bend at the knees. There was a knocking at the door. It should not be possible for a knock to sound surreptitious, and yet this knock achieved it. It had harmonics. They told the hindbrain, the person knocking will, if no one eventually answers, open the door anyway and sidle in, whereupon he will certainly nick any smokes that are lying around, read any correspondence that catches his eye, open a few drawers, take a nip out of such bottles of alcohol as are discovered, but stop short of major crime because he's not criminal in the sense of making a moral decision, but in the sense that a weasel is evil. It is built into his very shape. It was a knock with a lot to say for itself. Come in, Nobby, said Vimes wearily. Corporal Nobbs sidled in. It was another special trait of his that he could sidle forwards as well as sideways. He saluted awkwardly. There was something absolutely changeless about Corporal Nobbs, Vimes told himself. Even Fred Cullen had adapted to the changing nature of the city watch, but nothing had altered Corporal Nobbs in any way. It wouldn't matter what you did to him. There was always something fundamentally Nobby about about Corporal Nobbs. Nobby, yes, sir. Take a seat, Nobby. Corporal Nobbs looked suspicious. This was not how a dressing down was supposed to begin. Fred said you wanted to see me, Mr. Vimes, on account of timekeeping. Today. Oh, yes. Nobby, how many grandmother's funerals have you been to? Three, said Nobby uncomfortably. Three. It turned out Nanny Nobbs wasn't quite dead the first time. So why have you taken all this time off? Don't like to say, sir. Why not? You're going to go spare, sir. Spare, you know, sir. Throw a wobbler. I might not be by my side, but it'll be nothing to what'll be get heaved if you don't tell me. Thing is, it's the Tricera, this 300-year celebration thing next year, Mr. Vimes, yes? Now he licked his lips. I didn't like to ask for time off special. Fred said you were a bit sensitive about it all. But, you know, I'm in the peeled nuts, sir. Vimes nodded. Those clowns who dress up and pretend to fight old battles with blunt swords, he said. The Ankh-Morpork Historical Recreation Society, sir, said Nobby, a shade reproachfully. That's what I said. Well, we're going to recreate the Battle of Ankh-Morpork for the celebrations, see. That means extra practice. It all begins to make sense, said Vimes, nodding wearily. You've been marching up and down with your tin pike, eh? In my time? Not exactly, Mr. Vimes, sir. I've been riding up and down on my white horse to tell the truth. Oh, playing at being a general, eh? A bit more than a general, sir. Go on. Nobby's Adam's apple, Bob nervously. I'm going to be King Lorenzo, sir. You know, the last king, the one the air froze. You are going to be, Nobby began. I'm healing each word with like a sullen grape of wrath. I said you'd go spare, said Nobby. Fred Cullen said you'd go spare, too. Why are you? We drew lots, sir. And you lost? Nobby scorned. Not exactly lost, sir. Not precisely lost. More sort of won, sir. Everyone wanted to play him. I mean, you get a horse and a good costume and everything, sir. And he was a king when all's said and done. The man was a vicious monster. Well, it was all a long time ago, sir, said Nobby anxiously. Vimes calmed down a little. And who drew the straw to play Stoneface Vimes, Nobby. Nobby hung his head. No one, sir. No one wanted to play him, sir. The little corporal swallowed and then plunged onward with the air of a man determined to get it all over with. "So we're making a man out of straw, sir, so he'll burn nicely when we throw him out on the bonfire in the evening. There's going to be fireworks, sir," he added, "and dreadful certainty. Vimes's face shut down. Nobby preferred to it when people shouted. He had been shouted at for most of his life. He could handle shouting. "No one wanted to be Stonefame's Vimes," Vimes said coldly. "On account of him being on the losing side, sir." "Losing? Vimes's Ironheads won. He ruled the city for 6 months." Nobby squirmed again. "Yeah, but everyone in the society says he didn't ought to of, sir. They said it was just a fluke, sir. After all, he was outnumbered 10-1, and he had warts, sir. And he was a bit of a bastard, sir. When all's said and done, he did chop off a king's head, sir. You get to be a bit of a nasty type to do that, sir. Saving your presence, Mr. Vimes." Vimes shook his head. What did it matter anyway? But it did matter somewhere. It had all been a long time ago. It didn't matter what bunch of deranged romantics thought. Facts were facts. "All right, I understand," he said. "It's almost funny, really, because there's something else I've got to tell you, Nobby." "Yes, sir," said Nobby, looking relieved. "Do you remember your father?" Nobby looked about to panic again. "What kind of question is that to suddenly ask somebody, sir? Purely a social inquiry." "Old Sconner, sir. Not much, sir. Never used to see him much except when the military police used to come to drag him out of the attic." "Do you know much about your antecedents?" "That is a lie, sir. I haven't got no antecedents, sir, no matter what you might have been told. "Oh, good. You don't actually know what antecedents means, do you, Nobby?" Nobby shifted uneasily. He didn't like being questioned by policemen, especially since he was one. "Not in so many words, sir. You never got told anything about your forebears." Another worried expression crossed Nobby's face, as Vimes quickly added, "Your ancestors. Only old Sconner, sir. If all this is working up to asking about them sacks of vegetables which went missing from the shop in Treacle Mine Road, I was not anywhere near the..." Vimes waved a hand vaguely. "He didn't leave you anything, or anything? "Couple of scars, sir. And this trick elbow of mine. It aches sometimes when the weather changes. I always remember old Sconner when the wind blows from the hub." "Ah, right. And this, of course," Nobby fished around behind his rustling breastplate. "And that was a marvel, too. Even Sergeant Cullen's armor could shine, if not actually gleam. But any metal anywhere near Nobby's skin corroded very quickly." The corporal pulled out a leather thong that hung around his neck. There was a gold ring on it. Despite the fact that gold cannot corrode, it had nevertheless developed a patina. "He left it to me when he was on his deathbed, said Nobby. "Well, when I say left it, did he say anything?" "Well, yeah, he said, 'Give it back, you little bugger, sir. See, he had it on a string around his neck, sir, just like me. But it wasn't like a proper ring, sir. I'd have flogged it, but it's all I got to remember him by, except that when the wind blows from the hub." Vimes took the ring and rubbed it with a finger. It was a steel ring with a coat of arms on it. Age and wear and the immediate presence of the body of Corporal Nobbs had made it quite unreadable. "You are Armiguris, Nobby." Nobby nodded. "But I got a special shampoo for it, sir." Vimes sighed. He was an honest man. He'd always felt that was one of the bigger defects in his personality. "When you've got a moment, nip along to the College of Heralds in Mollymog Street, will you? Take this ring with you and say I sent you. It's all right, Nobby," said Vimes. "You won't get into trouble, not as such. You say so, sir. And you don't have to bother with the sir, Nobby." "Yes, sir." When Nobby had gone, Vimes reached behind the desk and pulled up a faded copy of Torp's Peerage, or, as he personally thought of it, the Guide to the Criminal Classes. You wouldn't find slum dwellers in these pages, but you would find their landlords. And while it was regarded as pretty good evidence of criminality to be left in the slum for some reason, owning a whole street of them merely got you invited to the very best social occasions. These days, they seem to be bringing out a new edition every week. Dragon had been right about one thing, at least. Everyone in Ankh-Morpork Fork seemed to be hankering after more arms than they were born with. He looked up to Nobbs. There even was a damn coat of arms. One supporter of the shield was a hippo, presumably one of the royal hippos of Ankh-Morpork, and therefore the ancestor of Roderick and Keith. The other was a bull of some sort, with a very Nobby-like expression. It was holding a golden Ankh, which, this was being the Denobs coat of arms, it had probably stolen from somewhere. The shield was red and green. There was a white chevron with five apples on it. Quite what they had to do with warfare was unclear. Perhaps they were some kind of jolly visual pun or play on words that had them slapping their thighs down at the Royal College of Arms. Although probably if Dragon slapped his thigh too hard, his leg would fall off. It was easy enough to imagine an ennobled Nobbs, because where Nobby went wrong was in thinking small. He sidled into places and pinched things that weren't worth much. If only he'd sidled into continents and stolen entire cities, slaughtered many of the inhabitants in the process, he'd have been a pillar of the community. There was nothing in the book about under Vimes. Suffer not injustices, Vimes wasn't a pillar of the community. He killed a king with his own hands. It needed doing, but the community, whatever that was, didn't always like the people who did what needed to be done, or said what had to be said. He put some other people to death as well. That was true. But the city had been lousy. There had been a lot of stupid wars. We were practically part of the Clatching Empire. Sometimes you needed a bastard. History had wanted surgery. Sometimes Dr. Chopper is the only surgeon at hand. There's something final about an axe. But kill one wretched king and everyone calls you a regicide. It wasn't as if it was a habit or anything. Vimes had found Old Stoneface's journal in the Unseen University Library. The man had been hard, no doubt about that. But they were hard times. He'd written, "In the fires of struggle, let us bake new men who will not heed the old lies." But the old lies had won in the end. He said to people, "You're free." And they said, "Hooray." And then he showed them what freedom costs, and they called him a tyrant. And as soon as he'd been betrayed, they milled around, a bit like barn-bred chickens who have seen the big world outside for the first time. And then they went back into the warm and shut the door. Bing bong bingle beep. Vimes sighed and pulled out his organizer. "Yes? Memo. Appointment with bootmaker. 2 p.m. said the imp. "It's not 2 o'clock yet, and that was Tuesday in any case. So I'll cross it off the list of things to do then." Vimes put the disorganized organizer back in his pocket and went and looked out of the window again. Who had a motive for poisoning Lord Veterinary? No, that wasn't the way to crack it. Probably, if you went to some outlying area of the city and confined your investigation to little old ladies who didn't get out much. They're, what with all the wallpaper over the doors and door and everything, you might be able to find someone without a motive. But the man stayed alive by always arranging matters so that a future without him represented a riskier business than a future with him still upright. The only people, therefore, who'd risk killing him were madmen, and the gods knew Ankh-Morpork had enough of them. or someone who was absolutely confident that if the city collapsed, he'd be standing on top of the pile. If Fred were right, and the sergeant was generally a good indicator of how the man in the street thought, because he was the man in the street, then the person was Captain Carrot. But Carrot was one of the few people in the city who seemed to like Veterinary. Of course, there was one other person who stood to gain. Damn, thought Vimes, it's me, isn't it? There was another knock at the door. He didn't recognize this one. He opened the door cautiously. It's me, sir, Little Bottom. Come on in. Come in, then. It was nice to know there was at least one person in the world who had more problems than him. How is his lordship? Stable, said Little Bottom. Dead is stable, said Vimes. I mean, he's alive, sir. And sitting up, reading. Mr. Donut made up some sticky stuff that tasted of seaweed, sir. And I mixed in up some Glubel's salts, sir. You know the old man in the house on the bridge? What old? Oh, yes. It seemed a long time ago. What about him? Well, you asked me to look around, and I took some pictures. This is one, sir. He handed mine's a rectangle with. It was nearly all black. Odd, where'd you get it? Have you ever heard the story about dead men's eyes, sir? Assume I haven't had a literary education, Little Bottom. Well, they say. Who say? They say, you know, they. The same people who are the everyone and everyone knows? The people who live in the community? Yes, sir, I suppose, sir. So, sir. Well, Vimes waved a hand. Oh, them. Well, go on. They say that the last thing a dying man sees stays imprinted in his eyes, sir. Oh, that's just an old story. Yes, amazing, really. I mean, if it weren't true, you'd have thought I wouldn't have survived. It wouldn't have survived, wouldn't you? I thought I saw this little red spark go, so I got the imp to paint a really big picture before it faded completely. And right in the center, couldn't the imp have made it up, said Vimes, staring at the picture again? They haven't got the imagination to lie, sir. What they see is what you get. Glowing eyes. Two red dots, said Little Bottom, conscientiously. Which might indeed be a pair of glowing eyes, sir. Good point, Little Bottom. Vimes rubbed his chin. Blast. I just hope it's not a god of some sort. That's all I need at a time like this. Can you make copies, sir? So I can send them to all the watch houses? Yes, sir. The imp's got a good memory. Hop to it, then. But before Little Bottom could go, the door opened again. Vimes looked up. Carrot and Angwall were there. Carrot, I thought you were on your day off. We found a murder, sir, at the Dwarf Bread Museum. But when we got back to the watch house, they told us Lord Veterinary's dead. Did they? Thought Vimes. That's rumor for you. If we could modulate it with the truth, how useful it could be. He's breathing well for a corpse, he said. I think he'll be okay. Someone got past his guard, that's all. I've got a doctor to see him, don't worry. Someone got past his guard, he thought. Yes, and I'm his guard. I hope the man's a leader in the field. That's all I can say, said Carrot severely. He's even better than that. He's the doctor to the leaders of the field, said Vimes. I'm his guard, and I didn't see it coming. It'd be terrible for the city if anything happened to him, said Carrot. Vimes saw nothing but innocent concern behind Carrot's forthright stare. It would, wouldn't it? He said. Anyway, it's under control. You said there's been another murder. At the Dwarf Bread Museum, someone killed Mr. Hopkinson with his own bread. Made him eat it? Hit him with it, sir, said Carrot reproachfully. Battle bread, sir. Is he the old man with the white beard? Yes, sir. You remember I introduced you to him when I took you to see the Boomerang Biscuit exhibition. Angua thought she saw a faint wince of recollection speak guiltily across Vimes' face. Who's going around killing old men, he said to the world at large. Don't know, sir. Constable Angle went plain clothes. Carrot waggled his eyebrows conspiratorially and couldn't find a sniff of anyone. and nothing was taken. This is what it was done with. The battle bread was much larger than an ordinary loaf. Vimes turned it over gingerly. A dwarf's throw it like a discus, right? Yes, sir. At the Seven Mountains Games last year, Snorri Shieldbiter took the tops off a line of 6 hard-boiled eggs at 50 yards. Sir. And that was with just a standing hunting loaf. A standard hunting loaf. But this is, well, it's a cultural artifact. We haven't got the baking technology for bread like this anymore. It's unique. Valuable? Very, sir. Worth stealing. He'd never be able to get rid of it. Every honest dwarf would recognize it. Did you hear about that priest being murdered on Mispagot Bridge? Carrot looked shocked. Not old Father Tubalcheck, really. Vime stopped himself from asking, you know him then? This Carrot knew everyone. If Carrot were to be dropped into some dense tropical island jungle, it'd be, hello, mister, run swiftly through the trees. Good morning, Mr. Talks to the Forest. What a splendid blowpipe, and what a novel place for a feather. Did he have more than one enemy? Said Vimes. Sorry, sir. Why more than one? I should say the fact that he has one is obvious, wouldn't you? He was a nice old chap, said Carrot, hardly stirred out. Spent all his time with his books. Very religious, I mean. All kinds of religion. Studied them. Bit odd, but no harm in him. Why should anyone want to kill him? Or Mr. Hopkinson? A pair of harmless old men. Vimes handed him the battle bread. We shall find out, Constable Angua. I want you to have a look at this one. Take Corporal Littlebottom, he said. He's been doing some work on it. Angua's from Uberwald too, Littlebottom. Maybe you've got friends in common, that sort of thing. Carrot nodded cheerfully. Angua's expression went wooden. Herjok Gar Dwatch Shortats, said Carrot. Ha ha, Angua Constable Angua Gar Bak Bagorgra. Sure, Tad's Kabak. Angua appeared to concentrate. Gurduk de Buzzdrak, she managed. Carrot laughed. He just said, small, delightful mining tool of a feminine nature. Cheery stared at Angua, who returned the stare blankly while mumbling, well, dwarfish is difficult if you haven't eaten gravel all your life. Cheery was still staring. Thank you, he managed. I better go and tidy up. What about Lord Veterinary, said Carrot. I'm putting my best man on that, said Vimes. Trustworthy, reliable, knows the ins and outs of this place like the back of his hand. I'm handling it, in other words. Carrot's hopeful expression faded to hurt puzzlement. Don't you even want me to, he said. No, indulge an old man. I want you to go back to the watch house and take care of things. What things? Everything. Rise to the occasion. Move paper around. There's that new shift rotor to draw up. Shout at people. Read reports. Carrot saluted. Yes, Commander Vimes. Good. Off you go, then. And if anything happens to Veterinary, Vimes added to himself as the dejected Carrot went out, no one will be able to say you were anywhere near him. The little grill in the gate of the Royal College of Arms snapped open to the distant accompaniment of braying and grunts. Yes, said a voice. What dost thee want? I'm Corporal Knobs, said Nobby. An eye applied itself to the grill. It took in the full, dreadful extent of the godly handiwork that was Corporal Knobs. Are you the baboon? We've had one on order for... No, I've come about some coat with arms, said Nobby. You, said the voice. The owner of the voice made it very clear that he was aware there were degrees of nobility from something above kingship, stretching all the way down to commoner, and that as far as Corporal Knobs was concerned, an entirely new category, commonist perhaps, would have to be coined. I've been told, said Nobby miserably, it's about this ring I got. Go around the back door, said the voice. Cheery was tidying away the makeshift equipment he'd set up in the privy when a sound made him look around. Angua was leaning against the doorway. "What do you want?" he demanded.
"Nothing. I just thought I'd say don't worry.
I won't tell anyone if you don't want me to." "I don't know what you're talking about. I think you're lying." Cheery dropped a test tube and sagged onto a seat. "How could you tell?" he said. "Even other dwarfs can't tell. I've been so careful." "Shall we just say I have special talents?" said Angua. Cheery started to clean a beaker distractedly. "I don't know why you're so upset," said Angua. "I thought dwarves hardly recognized the difference between male and female. Anyway, half the dwarfs we bring in here on a number 23 are female. I know that, and they're the ones that are the hardest to subdue." "What's a number 23? "Running, screaming at people while drunk and trying to cut their knees off," said Angua. "It's easier to give them numbers than write it down every time. Look, there's plenty of women in this town that would love to do things the dwarf way. I mean, what are the choices they've got? Barmaid, seamstress, or someone's wife. While you can do anything the men can do. Provided we do only what the men do," said Cheery. Angua paused. "Oh," she said, "I see. Ha. Huh. Yes, I know that tune." "I can't hold an axe," said Cheery. "I'm scared of fights. I think songs about gold are stupid. I hate beer. I can't even drink dwarfishly. When I try to quaff, I drown the dwarf beside me." "I can see that could be tricky," said Angua. "I saw a girl walk down the street here, and some men whistled after her. And you can wear dresses with colors." "Oh dear," Angua tried not to smile. "How long have lady dwarfs felt like that? This? I thought they were happy with the way things are." "Oh, it's easy to be happy when you don't know any different," said Cheery bitterly. "Chainmail trousers are fine if you've never heard of lingerie. Oh, yes, said Angua. "Lingerie. Yes." She tried to feel sympathetic and felt that she was, really. But she did have to stop herself from saying that at least you don't have to find styles that can easily be undone by claws. "I thought I could come here and get a different kind of job," Cheery moaned. "I'm good at needlework, and I went to see the Guild of Seamstresses," and she stopped and blushed behind her beard. "Yes," said Angua, "lots of people make that mistake." She stood up straight and brushed herself off. "You've impressed Commander Vimes, anyway. I think you'll like it here. Everyone's got troubles in the watch. Normal people don't become policemen. You'll be fine. You'll get on fine." "Commander Vimes is a bit," Cheery began. "He's okay when he's in a good mood. He needs to drink, but he doesn't dare to these days. You know, one drink is too many, two is not enough. And that makes him edgy. When he's in a bad mood, he'll tread on your toes and then shout at you for not standing up straight." "You're normal," said Cheery shyly. "I like you." Angua patted her on the head. "You say that now," she said. "When you've been around here for a while, you'll find out that sometimes I can be a bitch." "What's that?" "What? That painting with the eyes. Or 2 points of red light," said Cheery. "Oh, yeah?" "It's the last thing Father Tubalchuk saw, I think," said the dwarf. Angua stared at the black rectangle. She sniffed. "There it is again." Cheery took a step backward. "What? What? Where's that smell coming from?" Angua demanded. "Not me." Angua grabbed a small dish from the bench and sniffed at it. "This is it. I smelled this at the museum. What is it?" "It's just clay. It was on the floor of the room where the old priest was killed," said Cheery. "Probably it came off someone's boot." Angua crumbled some of it between her fingers. "I think it's just potter's clay," said Cheery. "We used to use it at the guild for making pots," she added. Just in case Angua hadn't grasped things. "You know, crucibles and things. This looks like someone tried baking it, but didn't get the heat right. See how it crumbles? Pottery, said Angua.
I know a potter.
She glanced down at the dwarf's iconograph again. Please, no, she thought. Not one of them. The front gate of the College of Arms, both front gates, were swung open. The two heralds bobbed excitedly around Corporal Knobs as he tottered out. Has your lordship got everything he requires? Mph, said Nobby. If we can be of any help whatsoever. Mph. Any help at all? Mph. Sorry about your boots, my lord, but the wyvern's been ill. It'll brush off no problem when it dries. Nobby tottered off along the lane. He even walks nobly, wouldn't you say? More nobly than nobly, I think. It's disgusting that he's a mere corporal, a man of his breeding. Igneous the troll backed away until he was up against his potter's wheel. I never done it, he said. Done what? Said Angua. Igneous hesitated. Igneous was huge and, well, rocky. He moved around. The streets of Ankh-Morpork like a small iceberg, and, like an iceberg, there was more to him than immediately met the eye. He was known as a supplier of things, more or less any kind of things, and he was also a wall, which was the same as a fence, only a lot harder and tougher to beat. Igneous never asked unnecessary questions, because he couldn't think of any. Nothing, he said. Finally, Igneous had always found the general denial was more reliable than the special refutation. Glad to hear it, said Angua. Now, where do you get your clay from? Igneous's face crinkled as he tried to work out where this line of questioning could possibly go. I got receipts, he said. Every bit properly paid for. Angua nodded. It was probably true. Igneous, despite giving the appearance of not being able to count beyond 10, without ripping off someone else's arm, and having an intimate involvement in the city's complex hierarchy of crime, was known to pay his bills. If you were going to be successful in the world of crime, you needed a reputation for honesty. Have you seen any like this before? She said, holding out the sample. It's clay, said Igneous, relaxing a bit. A little. I see clay all the time. It don't have no serial number. Clay's clay. Got lumps of it out der back. You make bricks and pots and stuff out of it. There's loads of potters in this town, and we all got der stuff. Why you want to know about clay? Can't you tell where it come from? Aeneas took the tiny piece, sniffed it, and rolled it between his fingers. This is crank, he said, looking a lot happier now that the conversation was veering away from more personal concerns. That's like crappy clay. Just good enough for them lady potters with dangly earrings, what make coffee mugs what you can't lift with both hands. He rolled it again. Also, it got a lot of grog in it. That's a bit of old pots. All smashed up, real small. Makes it stronger. Any potter got loads of stuff like this. He rubbed it again. This has been sort of heated up, but it ain't properly baked. But you can't say where it came from. Out of der ground is der best I can do, lady, said Igneous. He relaxed a little now, and it appeared that inquiries were not to do with such matters as a recent batch of hollow statues and subjects of a similar nature. As sometimes happened in these circumstances, he tried to be helpful. Come and have a look at this. He loped away. The watchman followed him around through the warehouse, observed by a couple of dozen cautious trolls. No one liked to see policemen up close, especially if the reason you were working at Igneous's place was that it was nice and quiet and you wanted somewhere to lie low for a few weeks. While it was true that a lot of people came to Ankh-Morpork because it was a city of opportunity, sometimes it was the opportunity not to be hung, skewered, or dismantled for whatever crimes you'd left behind in the mountains. Just don't look, said Angwa. Why, said Cherry. Because there's just us, and there's at least 2 dozen of them, said Angwa. And all our clothes were made for people with full sets of arms and legs. Igneous went through a doorway and out into the yard behind the factory. Pots were stacked high on pallets. Bricks were carried in long rows. And under a crude roof were several large mounds of clay. There, said Igneous generously, clay. Is there a special name for it when it's piled up like that? Said Cherry timorously. She prodded the stuff. Yeah, said Igneous. That's technically what we calls a heap. Angela shook her head sadly. Not very much for clues. Clay was clay. She'd hoped there was all different sorts, and it turned out to be as common as dirt. And then Igneous helped the police with their inquiries. Do you mind if those goes out the back way, he mumbled. Yous makes the help nervous, and I get pots I can't sell. He indicated a pair of wide doors at the rear wall, big enough for a cart to get through. Then he fumbled in his apron and produced a large keyring. The padlock on the gate was small and shiny and new. You are afraid of theft, said Angwa. Now, lady, that's unfair, said Igneous. Someone broke their old lock when they pinched some stuff. Four months ago. Disgusting, isn't it, said Angwa. Makes you wonder why you pay your taxes, I expect. In some ways, Igneous was a lot brighter than, say, Mr. Ironcrust. He ignored the remark. It was just stuff, he said, ushering them through towards the open gates as speedily as he dared. Was it clay they stole? Said Cherry. It don't cost much, but it's the principle of the ting, he said. It beat me why they bothered. It come to something where half a ton of clay can just walk out the door. Angela looked at the lock again. Yes, indeed, she said distantly. The gate rattled shut behind them. They were outside in an alley. Fancy anyone stealing a load of clay, said Cherry. Did he tell the watch? I don't think so, said Angwa. Wasps don't complain too loudly when they're stung. Anyway, Detritus thinks Igneous is mixed up with smuggling slab to the mountains, and so he's itching for an excuse to have a poke around in there. Look, this is still technically my day off. She stepped back and peered up at the high spiked wall around the yard. Could you bake clay in a baker's oven? She said. Oh, no. It doesn't get hot enough? No, it's the wrong shape. Some of your pots would be baked hard, while others would still be green. Why do you ask? Why did I ask? Angwa thought. Oh, what the hell? Fancy a drink? Not ill, said Cherry quickly. And nowhere where you'd have to sing while you drink. Or slap your knees. Angwa nodded understandingly. Somewhere, in fact, without dwarfs? Yes. Where we're going, said Angwa. That won't be a problem. The fog was rising fast. All morning it had hung around in alleys and cellars. Now it was moving back in for the night. It came out of the ground and up from the river and down from the sky, a clinging, yellowish, stinging blanket. The river Ankh in droplet form. It found its way through cracks and, against all common sense, managed to survive in lighted rooms, filling the air with an eye-watering haze and making the candles crackle. Outdoors, every figure loomed, every shape was a menace. In a drab alley off a drab street, Angwa stopped, squared her shoulders, and pushed open a door. The atmosphere in the long, low, dark room altered as she stepped inside. A moment of time rang it like a glass bowl. And then there was a sense of relaxation. People turned back in their seats. Well, they were seated. It was quite likely they were people. Chiri moved closer to Angua. "What's this place called?" she whispered. "Hasn't really got a name," said Angua. "But sometimes we call it Beers." "It didn't look like an inn outside. How did you find it? You gravitate to it." Chiri looked around nervously. She wasn't sure where they were. Apart from somewhere in the cattle market district, somewhere up a maze of alleys. Angua walked to the bar. A deeper shadow appeared out of the gloom. "Hello, Angua," it said, in a deep, rolling voice. "Fruit juice, is it?" "Yes, chilled." "And what about the dwarf?" "She'll have him raw," said a voice somewhere in the gloom. There was a ripple of laughter in the dark. Some of it sounded altogether too strange to Chiri. She couldn't imagine it issuing from normal lips. "I'll have a fruit juice too," she quavered. Angua glanced at the dwarf. She felt oddly grateful that the remark from the darkness seemed to have gone entirely over the small bullet head. She unhooked her badge and with care and deliberation laid it down on the counter. It went perlink. Then Angua leaned forward and showed the iconograph to the barman. If it was a man, Chiri wasn't sure yet. A sign over the bar said, "Don't you ever change." "You know everything that's going on, Igor," Angua said. "Two old men got killed yesterday, and a load of clay got stolen from Igneous and the troll recently. Did you ever hear about that?" "What's that to you?" "Killing old men is against the law," said Angua. "Of course, a lot of things are against the law, so we're very busy in the watch. We like to be busy about important things. Otherwise, we have to be busy about unimportant things. Are you hearing me?" The shadow considered this. "Go and take a seat," it said. "I'll bring your drinks." Angua led the way to a table in an alcove. The clientele lost interest in them. A buzz of conversation resumed. "What is this place?" Chiri whispered. "It's a place where people can be themselves," said Angua slowly. "People who have to be a little careful at other times, you know?" "No." Angua sighed. "Vampires, zombies, boogeymen, ghouls. Oh my, the und..." She corrected herself. "The differently alive," she said. "People who have to spend most of their time being very careful, not frightening people. Fitting in. That's how it works here. Fit in. Get a job. Don't worry, people. And you probably won't find a crowd outside with pitchforks and flaming torches. But sometimes it's good to go where everybody knows your shape." Now that Chiri's eyes had grown accustomed to the low light, she could make out the variety of shapes on the benches. Some of them were a lot bigger than humans. Some had pointy ears and long muzzles. "Who's that girl?" she said. "She looks normal." "That's Violet. She's a tooth fairy. And next to her is Schleppel, the boogeyman." In the far corner, something sat huddled in a huge overcoat under a high, broad-brimmed pointed hat. "And him?" "That's Old Man Trouble," said Angua. "If you know what's good for you, you don't mind him." Any werewolves here?" "One or two," said Angua. "I hate werewolves." "Oh?" The oddest customer was sitting by herself at a small round table. She appeared to be a very old lady in a shawl and a straw hat with flowers in it. She was staring in front of her with an expression of good-natured aimlessness, and in context looked more frightening than any of the shadowy figures. "What is she?" Chiri hissed. "Her? Oh, that's Mrs. Gamage. And what does she do?" "Do? Well, she comes in here most days for a drink and some company. Sometimes they have a sing-song, old songs that she remembers. She's practically blind, if you mean, is she an undead?" "No, she isn't. She's not a vampire, a werewolf, a zombie, or a boogeyman. Just an old lady." A huge, shambling, hairy thing paused at Mrs. Gamage's table and put a glass in front of her. Port and lemon. There you goes, Mrs. Gamage, it rumbled. Cheers, Charlie, the old lady cackled. How's the plumbing business? Doing fine, love, said the boogeyman, and vanished into the gloom. That was a plumber? Of course not. I don't know who Charlie was. He probably died years ago. But she thinks the boogeyman is him. And who's going to tell her different? You mean she doesn't know this place as... Look, she's been coming here ever since the old days when it was the Crown and Axe, said Angua. No one wants to spoil things. Everyone likes Mrs. Gamage. They watch out for her. Help her out in little ways. How? Well, I heard that last month someone broke into her hovel and stole some of her stuff. That doesn't sound helpful. And it was all returned next day, and a couple of thieves were found in the shades with not a drop of blood left in their bodies. Angua smiled, and her voice took on a mocking edge. You know, you get told a lot of bad things about the undead, but you never hear about the marvelous work they do in the community. Igor the barman appeared. He looked more or less human, apart from the hair on the back of his hands and the single unbifurcated eyebrow across his forehead. He tossed a couple of mats on the table and put their drinks down. You're probably wishing this was a dwarf bar, said Angua. She lifted her beer mat carefully and glanced at the underside. Cherry looked around again. By now, if it had been a dwarf bar, the floor would be sticky with beer. The air would be full of flying quaff, and people would be singing. They'd probably be singing the latest dwarf tune, Gold, 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 or one of the old favorites like Gold, 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 or the all-time biggie, Gold, Gold, Gold. In a few minutes, the first axe would have been thrown. No, she said, it could never be that bad. Drink up, said Angua. We've got to go and see something. A large hairy hand grabbed Angua's wrist. She looked up into a terrifying face, and all eyes and mouth and hair. Hello, Schlitzen, she said calmly. Ha, I'm hearing where there's a baron who's really unhappy about you, said Schlitzen, alcohol crystallizing on his breath. That's my business, Schlitzen, said Angua. Why don't you just go back behind your door, like the good boogeyman that you are? Ha, he's saying where you're disgracing the old country. Let go, please, said Angua. Her skin was white where Schlitzen was gripping her. Cherry looked from the wrist to the boogeyman's shoulder. Rangy though the creature was, muscles were strong along the arms like beads on a wire. Ha, huh, you're wearing a badge, it sneered. What's a good way? Angua moved so fast she was a blur. Her free hand pulled something from her belt and flipped it up and onto Schlitzen's head. He stopped and stood swaying back and forth gently, making faint moaning sounds. On his head, flopping down around his ears like the knotted hanky of a style-impaired seaside sunbather, was a small square of heavy material. Angua pushed back her chair and grabbed the beer mat. The shadowy figures around the walls were muttering. Let's get out of here, she said. Igor, give us half a minute, and then you can take the blanket off him. Come on. They hurried out. The fog had already turned the sun into a mere suggestion, but it was vivid daylight compared to the gloom in the beers. What happened to him, said Cherry, running to keep up with Angua's stride. Existential uncertainty, Angua said. He doesn't know whether he exists or not. It's cruel, I know, but it's the only thing we've found that works against boogeymen. Blue fluffy blankets. Blanket, for preference. She noted Cherry's blank expression. Look, boogeymen go away if you put your head under the blankets. Everyone knows that, don't they? So, if you put their head under a blanket... Oh, I see... Ooh, that's nasty. He'll feel all right in 10 minutes, Angua skimmed the beer mat across the alley. What was he saying about a baron? I wasn't really listening, said Angua, carefully. Cherry shivered in the fog, but not just from the cold. He sounded like he came from Uberwald, like us. There was a baron who lived near us, and he hated people to leave. Yes, the whole family were werewolves. One of them ate my second cousin. Angua's memory spun in a hurry. Old meals came back to haunt her from the tiny time before she'd said, no, this is not the way to live. A dwarf. No, she was pretty sure she'd never... The family had always made fun of her eating habits. That's why I can't stand them, said Cherry. Oh, people say they can be tamed, but I say, once a wolf, always a wolf. You can't trust them. They're basically evil, aren't they? They could go back to the wild at any moment, I say. Yes, you may be right. And the worst thing is, most of the time, they walk around looking just like real people. Angua blinked, glad of the twin disguises of the fog and Cherry's unquestioning confidence. Come on, we're nearly there. Where? We're going to see someone who's either our murderer or who knows who the murderer is. Cherry stopped. But you've got only a sword, and I haven't even got that. Don't worry, we won't need weapons. Oh, good. They won't be any use. Oh. Vimes opened his door to see what all the shouting was about down in the office. The Corporal Manning, or in this case Torfin, the desk, was having trouble. Again, how many times have you been killed this week? I was minding my own business, said the unseen complainer. Stacking garlic. You're a vampire, aren't you? I mean, let's see what jobs you have been doing. Post sharpener for a fencing firm. Sunglasses tester for Argus Opticians. Is it me, or is there some underlying trend here? Excuse me, Commander Vimes? Vimes looked round into a smiling face that sought only to do good in the world, even if the world had other things it wanted done. Aha, constable visit, yes, he said hurriedly. At the moment, I'm afraid I'm rather busy, and I'm not even sure that I have to have got an immortal soul. Ha ha. And perhaps you could call again one. It's about those words you asked me to check, said Visit reproachfully. What words? The ones Father Tubalchek wrote in his own blood. He said to try and find out what they meant. Oh, yes, come on into my office, Vimes relaxed. This wasn't going to be another one of those painful conversations about the state of his soul and the necessity of giving it a wash and brush up before eternal damnation set in. This was going to be about something important. It's ancient keratin, sir. It's out of one of their holy books, although, of course, when I say holy, it is in fact that they were basically misguided in it. Yes, yes, I'm sure, said Vimes, sitting down. Does it by any chance say Mr. X did it? Arg, arg, arg? No, sir. That phrase does not appear anywhere in any known holy book, sir. Ah, said Vimes. Besides, I looked at other documents in the room, and the paper does not appear to be in the deceased's handwriting, sir. Vimes brightened up. Aha! Someone else's. Does it say something like, take that, you bastard. We've been waiting ages to get you for what you did all those years ago. No, sir. That phrase also does not appear in any holy book anywhere, said Constable and hesitated, except in the Apocrypha to the Vengeful Testament of Offler, he added conscientiously. These words are from the Kinoteam Book of Truth, he sniffed, as they called it. It's what their false god. Could I just perhaps scab the words and leave out the comparative religion, said Vimes. Very well, sir. Visit looked hurt, but unfolded a piece of paper and sniffed disparagingly. These are some of the rules that their god allegedly gave to the first people after he'd baked them out of clay, sir. Rules like, thou shalt labor fruitfully all the days of your life, sir. And thou shalt not kill, and thou shalt be humble. That sort of thing. Is that all? Said Vimes. Yes, sir, said Visit. They're just religious quotations? Yes, sir. Any idea why it was in his mouth? Poor devil looked like he was having a last cigarette. No, sir. I could understand if it was one of the smilier smite your enemies once, said Fimes. But that's just saying get on with your work and don't make trouble. Sino was a rather liberal god, sir. Not big on commandments. Sounds almost decent, as gods go. Visit looked disapproving. The Sinotines died around through 500 years of waging some of the bloodiest wars on the continent, sir. Spare the thunderbolts and spoil the congregation, eh? Said Vimes. Pardon, sir? Oh, nothing. Well, thank you, Constable. See that Captain Carrot is informed, and thank you once again. Don't let me keep you from... Vimes' desperately accelerating voice was too late to prevent Visit pulling a roll of paper out of his breastplate. I brought you the latest Unadorned Facts magazine, sir, and also this month's Battle Call, which contains many articles that I'm sure will be of interest to you, including Pastor Nasal Peddler's exhortation to the congregation to rise up and speak to people sincerely through their letterboxes, sir. Thank you. I can't help noticing that the pamphlets and magazines I gave you last week are still on your desk where I left them, sir. Oh, yes, well, sorry, you know how it is. The amount of work these days makes it so hard to find the time to. It's never too soon to contemplate eternal damnation, sir. I think about it all the time, Constable. Thank you. Unfair, thought Vimes, when Visit had gone. A note is left at the scene of a crime in my town, and does it have the decency to be a death threat? No. The last dying scrawl of a man determined to name his murder. No, it's a bit of religious doggerel. What's the good of clues that are more mysterious than the mystery? He scribbled a note on Visit's translation and chucked it into his entree.